He comes from Culver City. He started Washington State. He took his first dates out in Santa Monica.
Michael Bumpus, host of the podcast Bump City. You also see him on 710 ESPN Radio, as well as Root Sports. Michael Bumpus, Cougar legend, wide receiver. He gets on to discuss not only the Cougs, but his elite training academy, as well as what he's doing in the Monroe community. Michael Bumpus, WST podcast, your source for West Coast sports, coming up. Michael, I was going to ask how to address you, but you already labeled yourself Bump, so we'll run with that if that's all right.
Hey, whatever works.
How's your podcast going?
It's good, man. You know, it's had its ups and downs, you know, good weeks and bad weeks. Just trying to figure out what formula works and what people want to hear and stuff. So, but the last 3 or 4 weeks have been good, man. My listeners are bumping up and I'm getting some good hosts like this weekend or this week I have, guests. This week I have Kerry Colbert, the receiver from receiver coach at USC joining. So, nice. You know, it's getting some traction. Had John Clayton last week. So
I saw that.
We're getting there, man. We're getting there.
Anytime you can get the professor, you know you're hitting.
I was surprised to say yes. I mean, I work with him, but right. He's so damn busy. I'm like, you're going to come in my little ass podcast? But he did, man.
We always, when we invite guests, we're like, we're an up and coming. We don't tell how far up we need to go.
That's how you do it.
You're doing radio and TV for both Root Sports and ESPN right now, right?
Yeah, I do radio for ESPN, and then during the football season, it's ESPN, but it's more a Seahawk, you know what I mean? I support the Seahawks, but through ESPN, and I do Root Sports during the fall. This is my first year not coaching, so I'll be able to do a little more this year than I have been the last 2 years.
Yeah, free up probably, 5-6 hours in the day for you, huh?
Yeah, shit, more than that, honestly.
Up in there. And you're doing I saw you had a segment, 100 Yards with Bump. With the Seahawks.
Yeah, I do 100 yards with Bump. I get a player every week with just 100 yards, BS a little bit, really informal. And then I do like some podcasts. I do a couple podcasts for the Seahawks every week. So just trying to get out there as much as I can, man, you know?
Busy man. Relevant. What rookie you looking forward to doing 100 yards with?
You know, Freddie Swain. Like, no one's really talking about this kid, the kid from Florida. I mean, I watch his film, and he's a baller, you know? It's just, what type of opportunities is he going to get now? You know, I told somebody, I said, he's got to go down and tackle somebody. He's got to get on the kickoff team or something, you know? But I'm really excited to see him and DJ Dallas. Like, you know, Taylor and all those guys are good. They're going to play. But, you know, I was an undrafted free agent. So I want to see, you know, the underdogs, the guys who are fighting to make the team, kind of see what they're doing.
Yeah. You did that early on in your career in Pullman, right? A little of everything, special teams, punt return. You know, let's go back to your recruiting when you initially were coming out of Culver City. You're number 10 wide receiver in the country. Some people had you locked going to USC. What made you spurn USC and really get you to Pullman?
Man, what people really don't know is that I had a soft verbal to LSU when Nick Saban was there. I took an unofficial there, and my dad lived in Mississippi. And I'm like, you know what, if I go to LSU, he'll be able to come to my game. So I told Saban I was going there, him and Coach Dooley. And I came back home, and my mom shut it down. She was like, nah, you're not going to Louisiana. I can't afford, you know, the tickets to get down there. So I'm like, all right, cool. Well, I'll go with SC. I take my trip to SC, which was awesome. I was there with like Ted Ginn. There's a lot of big names that were on that trip. And SC does a great job of recruiting. I mean, as you can imagine, like, they were the football team in LA back then.
Who was the coach then?
Pete Carroll.
Okay.
Yeah, Carroll was a coach. And I commit to them. And then I want to say, like, a week before I'm supposed to sign, Pete Carroll gives me a call. He goes, hey, we want you to redshirt. And, you know, I'm like, shoot, I'm the number 10 receiver in the country. Like, why do you want me to redshirt, you know? And they kept it 100 with me. They were like, look, we got this kid, Dwayne Jarrett, that we're going to sign. I'm like, at the time, I'm like, man, who's this cat, dude? You know, hindsight, good for them, because he was one of the best receivers to ever play in the pack. So then I knew, my mom was always like, man, you got to have a plan C. You got to have a plan C. And Wazoo was my plan C. I never thought I was going to get to plan C. But I took my trip to Wazoo, and it was just love, man. Like, nobody was hating on each other. They're just coming off a Holiday Bowl. It just felt right. So I'm like, look, if I don't go to some of these big boy schools, you know, I'm going to switch it up and go to an environment that I've never been in before and check out the Palouse. And it just happened that way, man.
Oh, hey, Mike, you mentioned, or Bump, you mentioned something about your mom not shutting you down from going out to LSU. COVID impact, recruits, do you think that's going to be, you know, benefit the Pac-12 teams? We've asked this of many people, but I think you're, do you see more teams benefiting from, you know, parents not wanting their kids going halfway across the country?
Man, you know, I think parents these days are more in tune with what's going on as far as recruiting and what schools are getting guys out. Because end of the day, yeah, kids want to go to school. You want to get education. But we do this because we all want to go to the league. And I think parents these days, because of social media, because all the ways you can stay in the loop, I think they're thinking more of, okay, where does my son have the best opportunity to go to the NFL if he's like a four-star, five-star, some of those big names. So I think for the top tier guys, they're just going to go wherever they want to go. You know, they're going to go where they're winning ball games and where they fit in. Now, I say like the second level to third tier guys, those are the ones who are going to be a little more strategic in their moves. You know, they're like, look, I'm not probably not going to go to the NFL. I'm going for an education. Why should I go and why shouldn't I go? So I think there's just different angles to it. You know, top tier guys, Alabama, LSU, you know, UW, even now that UW, I mean, I am a Cougar, but UW's doing, they're doing it right over there. You can't even hate on them. You know what I mean? So I think it just comes down to how good the kid really is and what are their expectations for the next level.
That seems to be the theme. I think Kaywin and I talked about it. SEC is putting so many players into the NFL. Yeah. Especially LSU this last year with the run they had. And those first-round draft picks are making a lot of money, especially in the rookie contract. Hey, Bump, you were out in the Palouse for 4 years.
Yeah.
Who was your favorite teammate? We had Jed on recently. Who was your favorite teammate, well, those 4 years? That you, someone that you bonded with, that you still keep in touch with?
You know, I got a couple. I got, like, the teammate that – I played a lot with, you know, and then I got my boys who were kind of, you know, didn't play much, but, you know, I lived with them and stuff. So the one that I played with was Brink, you know, because Alex Brink was quarterback there for 4 years, held almost every record until Leach came in and, you know, what happened there. But it was Alex Brink, because we were both freshmen. He was a redshirt freshman. I was a true freshman. And we were both fighting for starting time, like the first 2 or 3 weeks. And we kind of connected. It was a trip to New Mexico. Our first game was in New Mexico, and we were flying back. And for some reason, they sat us next to each other. Maybe they felt like this was going to be a connection later on. So we sat next to each other and just got to know each other, man. And from then, like, I'll see Brink, you know, this summer at a Cougar event, and we'll still talk about that moment. Because since then, we're like, all right, let's go do this thing together. But someone who didn't play that someone probably won't even know about was Finus Rad. This dude's like 6'6 receiver out of Oakland, California. It was just unfortunate. He was stuck behind Jason Hill and Brandon Gibson, two of the greatest receivers to come out. So he never got to see the field. But to this day, his wife is from Washington. So he moved up about 6 months ago. So he's down in Renton. So, you know, we're connected. But yeah, those were probably the two dudes that I kicked it with the most, for sure.
You've done a great job of carrying on the Cougar legacy. I'll say that. Real quick, on that note, how would you like your Cougar legacy to be defined? I think you held the record for most receptions over the course of your career. Mm-hmm. What do you tell people when you talk about the Cougs?
Ah, man, I tell them that, one, we're underdogs every year. I mean, if you're not an underdog, if you don't like grinding from the bottom and trying to make a name for yourself, then you just don't go to Washington State. And it's weird. I didn't even realize that when I was being recruited. You know, I didn't really get into football until my 10th grade year. Like, I played football in 9th grade, but I didn't really keep up with colleges. It was just UCLA, USC, and, you know, where I was growing up. So I didn't realize that Wazoo was an underdog. I didn't realize they took so many L's in the Apple Cup. I was just like, look, I was so unbiased. I'm just like, look, I'm just going to go to this school because they seem like some grinders. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I want my legacy to be and what my team's legacy to be, 04 to 07. Like, we weren't, we're about a 6-6 team almost every year. But teams knew you had to come play. You know, our offense was going to put up a bunch of points. Our defense was going to get some stops every now and then. I mean, we beat a couple top-ranked teams. We beat Oregon a couple of times. We almost beat SC. I think we lost by like 6 points or something like that. So we were just grinders. And we throw our punches, man. You close your eyes, throw a punch, you might hit a chin and drop a giant. You know what I mean? So that was our approach while I was there.
So in 2008, you played for the Seahawks, and you caught your first NFL touchdown It was a 10-yard pass from Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through the formation and the play that led to that?
Yep. First and only touchdown. I'm proud of that. You know what I mean? Hey, I was there for a bit. But it was a 2x2 formation. We had ran this in practice. I knew if we ran it in the red zone, I would have a chance. I started on the left side of the formation. Matt motioned me back over to the right. I just ran a drag across the field. I think I was his first or second option. I split the Mike linebacker and the backside backer and just looking for some space to sit down. And I kid you not, man, I saw Matt look at me. I'm wide open. He's like, man, this rookie, I'm going to go in this way. He looks the other way. Then he comes back to me, throws it nice and low where no one else can get it. And it was like slow motion, man. It was a dream come true. I scored a touchdown. Me and my boy, Trent Shelton, who was on the team. If you look up Trent Shelton now, he's like a motivational speaker. He's got like millions of followers. The dude is doing great things. But we were both on the practice squad together. So we used to we had a little dance we did, you know, every time we did something at practice. We're like, look, if any of us get into the end zone first, we gotta do this. So I did it. I do my little dance. I score. I leave the ball there. Didn't even think of taking the ball. Julius Jones grabbed the ball for me. He's like, "Bub, man, your first touchdown. You know you got to take this." So I grab the ball. After the game, Trent comes to pick me up from the house. And the first thing he does is get out the car and do the dance. it was cool, man. It was a great moment for sure.
It sounds like a great moment. If you think of wide receivers today, there's a lot of different skills they have to have. You know, run after the catch, route running, catching a crowd, you know, just having ball skills as well. What's the most important skill you think a wide receiver has to have when playing with Russell Wilson?
Playing with Russell Wilson, you have to be able to catch the ball that's not on schedule. You know, you have to be able to move into space, because if you look at Russell Wilson play, a lot of the times he's off schedule. It's a play action deep. He's looking backside, or it's a quick game. He pumps and then he slides in the pocket. So you have to be okay with running a slant, not getting the ball in that first hole, running to the next hole, maybe even reversing out and going back to the sideline. And I think that's why Tyler Lockett is so good with Russell, because Tyler Lockett is great at just finding space on the field. His awareness is nuts. So just being able to play backyard football, I think that's what it comes down to end of the day. Now, you have to run your routes. You got to be where you're supposed to be, because he's not just going to throw untimely balls every time. But the big plays are usually the untimely football. So just being able to be a football player, go back to when you were a kid and you're on the block, you're playing this light post, that light post. No one's really drawn any routes up. You're just out there looking for space. And, you know, you just go back to the roots of football when you're little, and it makes the plays. It makes the tough one. You know, he's going to drop a dime. I mean, he puts the football in awkward places. And if you're not ready for it, it'll sneak up on you. So just being ready and being okay working on the footballs that aren't on time.
So I'm down in the Bay Area, or I grew up in the Bay Area. I'm down in LA now, but watching the Seahawks game, it seemed like DK Metcalf and Russ got more in a rhythm in the second half of the year. He finished with 7 touchdowns, over 900 yards. What's DK's ceiling as a wide receiver, in your opinion?
Man, I think he could be an all pro. I think he'd be a pro bowler. If you look at his body type, right? He's like a T.O. body type of guy. But honestly, I think his hands right now are better than T.O.'s hands when he was young. Wow. T.O.'s a Hall of Famer, no doubt. But T.O. dropped a lot of footballs, man. I mean, you think about that 98 conference championship, I think it was, against Green Bay, where he's dropping all those footballs and he makes a tough one in the end.
I was booing him from my couch all game.
he drops the football sometimes, but when the ball's in his hands, he's like a thoroughbred, man. Those knees get up, and that's kind of what I see with DK. He's learning how to make the difficult catch, but when you're that big and you're that swole, right, your body is going to be tight. And I think for him being his size, his body is tight, but it's not as tight as I see a young T.O. So I think he can be an all pro. And a pro bowler, it's all depends on his development at this point. And, you know, the knock with DK was, oh, he can't run this route, he can't run that route, he's only good for a go and a post. So what? Throw the go and throw the post to him. You know, it's his first year. As he gets older, he'll learn how to run a slant. He'll learn how to attack, leverage, and sweep him by and get underneath. You know, that's why you have guys like Lockett around. You know, he'll even learn some stuff from an Olsen. Olsen's not fast. Greg Olsen, tight end, he is not fast. He's got to be able to attack, leverage, use hands. So as long as he's receptive to learning, which it looks like he is receptive to it, man, I think the sky's the limit for this dude.
Yeah, back to what you said about the, you know, the receivers in Russ's offense being able to find holes. That's what McKeffin do, right? Big post up, got the guy. So,
So if we stay in the division, we talk about some of the other wide receivers. We'll go to Arizona, DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
So, would you rank him? Is he one of the best NFL receivers, or is he the best? Because I know what he said, but we'd love to get your opinion on Hopkins. What makes him so great?
Yeah, honestly, you know, people are going to say who? Michael Thomas, right? Caught all those footballs last year. I get it. But honestly, I take a Hopkins over Thomas. I think he is the best receiver in the league. And I think he is for a couple things I mentioned that DK kind of struggles with, or his flexibility. Like, he can play like a big receiver, and then he can play like a small receiver. I think it was last year or the year before, he caught a football against the Dallas Cowboys, makes one guy miss, boom, spins off another guy, and he looks loose and he looks flexible. And then when you want to, you put him in the red zone, just toss it up to him, and he'll go get it. So I will take Hopkins over Thomas. What I will say Thomas does is he's good in finding space, you know, but he's also playing with one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play, whereas Hopkins had like 8 or 9 quarterbacks throwing it to him, and he's still able to get it done. So it's not a knock against Michael Thomas, but it is what it is. You got Drew Brees back there, man. You know, like, it's almost like if you are an all-pro type of dude, you're supposed to put up those numbers. Granted, he did something no one's ever did before. Thomas is a baller, but me personally, I'll take the receiver who can do what the big man can do, what the little man can do, and I think that's Hopkins.
Now, if we move to my San Francisco 49ers, we got Deebo Samuel, where Shanahan likes to move him all around.
Yeah.
So he'll do a jet sweep, he'll do an out, he'll do a slant, a screen pass. What do you think he needs to work on to take that next step to become an elite number one receiver?
Now, Deebo, I love Deebo. I love his game. When the football is in his hands, he turns into a running back. He's a beast. He's thick. He's strong. He's fast. And I think with his offense, he's not really asked to be a route runner. You know, there's a lot of misdirection, dragging across the field, running screen there. So if there has to be something in his development, it will be just being sharp at the top of your route. You know, can you give the illusion? You know, as a running back, you're just selling something that's not there. I'm selling a go. I'm selling an in. I'm selling an out. You know, and I think as he develops, he'll get better at that. And I think as he develops, Shanahan will open up the playbook more for him. Now, Shanahan, he's great at what he does. Misdirections all day, dragging. That's why Kittle gets his money. That's why Jimmy doesn't have to throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field. You just get it to your guys. You're gone, you know. So he will do what's best for the team in that offense. But as he gets older, as he gets wiser, I think that working in tight spaces when you're going linear, you know, when you're going lateral, that puts stress on the defense in a different way, and you don't have to be as sharp. When you go linear, you're getting up and down the field, you're moving guys left and right. That's when you really start working on your craft. So the more he does that, the better he'll get at it.
Okay. And if we close out with the Rams, we got Cooper Kupp. You know, a lot of people talk about his field awareness and his vision. What are some of the things that you think make him a special wide receiver?
Man, Cooper Kupp, at the top of his routes, he is nasty. I mean, he'll put that foot in the ground, go right for half a step, sink his hip. So the things that I think Deebo Samuel needs to work on, Kupp already has it. And I'm watching him, his offseason workouts. He realizes, and then he's honest with himself, right? He realizes, look, I'm not the fastest dude out here. How can I get faster? You know, and I'm not the fastest guy out here. How can I be more deceptive in my movements? And I think that's what he's great at. And then he goes up and gets the rock, you know. Receiver, you can do all that stuff. If you can't catch the rock, then you go ahead and play defense and bat it down. You know what I'm saying? So Cooper catches the rock. He's a Washington guy. I'm almost giving up my Cali card, man, because I moved to Washington when I was 18. And my wife is like, I don't know how much Cali you got in yesterday. First off, babe, don't get it twisted. I'm Cali all day. But when I turned 36, I would have been out in Cali as long as I were Washington and I was in Cali. So we'll see how that goes. But Coop is a Washington guy, so you got to support him. But at the top of his routes, the dude is nasty. He can sink his hips. He can shift his weight and get in and out better than I've seen a lot of people do.
Yeah, coming out of Eastern Washington, I mean – you don't really get much pub and no one really heard about him, but he's lived up to that. I think he had the most catches all time in FCS history.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
So he absolutely has lived up to it. Bump, we're going to get into something we call the West Coast swing.
All right.
Just quick hitters. Tell us what you think. Not too serious. Yep. I'm going to start with Your favorite bar.
I moved to Santa Monica for you, Bob.
No, Santa Monica, cool. Yep. That's where I used to take all my first dates.
So, Bob, we're going to start with your favorite Valhalla, the Coug, or other.
Woo, I got to go with Valhalla. Valhalla's 80s night downstairs. It gets dark. It gets grimy. I was all about that. Coug is more of a, you know, bring your dad in town and have a beer type. You know, when it's off season and we're trying to go Valhalla all day.
You've been back to the new Valhalla? You
see how I haven't. I've driven by it, but I have my wife and kids with me. So I had to do, I was on daddy duties.
It wasn't too bad. You could actually bring the wife and kids. They've totally revamped it. It's nice. Okay.
So, Bump, I know you're a fitness guru, a trainer, but if it's a cheat day and you have a cheat meal, what are you ordering from Ferdinand's?
Ferdinand's. Oh, what is Ferdinand's? I don't know what Ferdinand's is. What is that?
Is that where you get the ice cream? Is it the creamery on campus?
Creamery. Yeah, we're getting cooler. Why don't you just tell us cheat meal if you're in Pullman, or Monroe, or wherever you are?
My go-to, I used to go to, Pizza Pipeline. They used to have the Hawaiian style pizza and a drink for like $7. And whenever I just felt like eating, now I wouldn't call it nasty, but just not being on a regimen, I go Pizza Pipeline all day with the lemonade, Hawaiian style pizza with the lemonade.
Garlic knots were legit too. All right, Bump, give me three things you'd use to sell recruits on Pullman. I think you already talked about the underdog, but what about some environmental stuff, maybe coaches that you see coming up, opportunities in Pullman that people may not be aware of?
Pullman, one, it's the family environment. Like, it's legit. I used to drive through Pullman in the winter, and it's the only place I'd pick up a hitchhiker. I see a student just walking, it's snowing, he's slipping. I'm like, man, hop in the truck, let's go. You know, there's not too many places left in America where you feel comfortable just picking up hitchhikers. So like the community aspect is like everyone's there for each other. Two, I would say, I mean, shoot, everybody knows, man, Coug's party, man. I mean, if you like to party, you know, you like to do your thing, then Pullman's the place for you. And you can walk everywhere. Like, you don't need to drive everywhere. So if you can party, do it safely, get home, you can walk. That's all good. The last one, I would say, you know what? It's not in Pullman, but Hoop Fest in Spokane every summer. We used to pack up my 4Runner and drive down there for a weekend. And I never saw a tournament, basketball tournament, that big. I think in Cali we had Hoop It Up. It's a 3-on-3 tournament. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing like Hoop Fest. And you get people from everywhere, like across the country. I met people from Florida that came to a Hoop Fest in Spokane, Washington. So just summer times out east, Spokane, Hoop Fest, good experience.
So, Bump, you grew up in Culver City. You went to Culver City High School. How would you describe Culver City to someone in Pullman?
Culver City. Now, there's two Culver Cities now. The Culver City when I was there and the Culver City now. Like, the Culver City when I was there, it was kind of like a spot you just kind of pass through to get to the beach. Now, Culver City is like artsy. It's trendy. It's super expensive. But I would describe it as, it's like a mini Hollywood. You know, you'll see a commercial being filmed in Culver City. You'll see a show being filmed in Culver City. You'll see celebrities. So it's low-key Hollywood at this point, but it's in the middle of everything. Like, you go east in Culver City, you're in the hood. You go north, you're in Beverly Hills. You go west, you're at Venice Beach, Santa Monica. So it's centrally located, and that's why we've kind of seen the boom and all the people moving there and stuff. So I would describe Culver City as a low-key Hollywood at this point.
All right, Bump. You complete the fifth year.
All right.
Better trainer, you or your wife?
Oh, hey, but thankfully we do different things. So, you know, she is more into the fitness. She has the Booty by Bumpus. So all these women want to go to her and get a booty. You know, I'm more of the athletic trainer. But you know what? Just because I've been married 10 years and I want to continue that way, the wifey is the better trainer all day.
That's a smart answer. So when Ben and I travel, we like to get in a workout, and we were in Arizona. We went to this place called Body, which is a high intensity circuit workout where Ben was struggling on his planks. So what kind of advice would you give Ben to tighten up and strengthen his core?
tighten up the core. Nutrition is everything. You know, if you're eating like crap, that core is going to suffer. And I would say working on the posterior muscles as well, the muscles on the back, because they both balance each other and support each other. So when a lot of people are struggling with their core, obviously you got to strengthen that, but you got to make sure you're hitting the stuff in the back. So doing some rows, some pull-ups and all that stuff. So just adding variety to workouts. People fall in love with doing the same stuff over and over again, and your body at some point just doesn't benefit from it. So just keep the variety going. You know, I'm not a CrossFit guy, but every now and then I'll do a CrossFit workout because I just want my body to feel something else. So just keep it versatile, man. Keep bouncing around. Try different things.
My wife has me doing the scared cat and then like the swimmers.
Yeah.
Those things for the lower back, some deadlifts. She's got me going. Well, all right. Same kind of question. You have 30 days to train Kay Wynn for his first NFL training camp. What do you got him doing?
What I got him doing? Well, I'm getting you in first and measuring you, seeing how strong you are. What's your squat? What's your bench? What's your vert? What's your broad? We're going there. But, you know, I'd mix it up. I go heavy one day. I go light another day. I do a HIIT the other day. I do a band workout the next day. A lot of testing, you know, where we're testing your first 10 yards in your sprint. We're testing your 40, how explosive you are. Some power cleans. Just a lot of explosive movements. You know, I'm going to take elements of different types of training and I'm going to mix it all in one. But the foundation always of football, as we know, it's the squat, it's the bench, it's the power clean. So that's the foundation. But then I'm going to hit you with a lot of different workouts that you might be doing it. You're like, is this really going to help me? And then 2 weeks later, when we test you again, your numbers are guaranteed to go up.
Now that I know the foundation, I know why I didn't play football or I wouldn't succeed in football.
That's what it was.
Those are like the exercises I'm not good at.
Yeah. I mean, you get our age though. Like I don't enjoy putting a lot of weight on my back and squat. I'm like, dude, I'm 34. There's no reason for me to do this anymore. So I go light. At this point, I go light and just go for lots of reps. Just get that heart pumping.
Hey, Bump, you talked about coaching real quick. Monroe. I used to play Monroe. I went to Mount Vernon.
Okay.
We rolled over them quite a bit in high school, I'll be honest.
All right.
What's the environment like up in Monroe these days? I noticed that you know, it's been some marches, but also that seems like the community's coming together. You've got your training facility up there. What are you doing with the high school kids? How are you engaging? Give a little more insight into ETA.
Yeah. Well, obviously I was the head coach at Monroe. I resigned in December to kind of focus on other things, but we get most of their athletes coming through Monroe. And as far as the environment of the city itself, honestly, we had a march, was that last week or a couple weeks ago? And I'm like, all right, I'm really going to see what my town is about. You know, there's a town next to us, Snohomish, where Antifa said they're going to show up. And there's guys in their pickup trucks and rifles and stuff. Yeah. It was something out of a movie. I'm like, all right, is Monroe that town? You know, I'm gonna find out. Did our march? It was all love. You know, granted, you know, there are some bad season there. Stuff is going to happen. But for the most part, it was cool. So Monroe is like, it's a small town, man. I think that if you treat people the right way in this town, you're going to receive the love. There's always going to be hate. It is what it is. People hate, you know, if you're not getting hating on and you ain't really doing nothing, you know, so I embrace the hate. It's all good. As far as my facility, we do a lot of outreach, man. I mean, I tell my wife and we agree on this, like we're not in this to make a bunch of money, right? As long as I could take my family on vacation, pay my mortgage and go play golf once a week. You know what I'm saying? I'm living a good life. So we do a lot of outreach. Like we'll have a 7-on-7 program and we never let a kid not play because he can't afford it. I'm like, there's going to be a way. We're going to make this work. We'll do fundraisers. We'll cut your price in half. Like we just want kids to have the experience because honestly, athletics is getting so damn expensive, man. I mean, if I was a kid in the same situation I was back in the 2000s growing up, I don't know if I would have access to a training facility or 7-on-17 because we just weren't making that much money. So our mission is just to help kids develop mentally, physically, and just never turn a kid away because he can't pay for something.
I love it. Bump, what do you shoot? What's your handicap?
Right now, I'm about a 14. By the end of summer, the lowest I've ever gotten was an 8, but that was when I was with the Hawks and I didn't have any kids and I could go and trick off a bunch of money on golf every month. I'm not in that position anymore. But the lowest I got down was 8. I'm trying to get down to at least 11 or 10.
All right, Kay Wynn, any more questions?
One more. So if you had to pick a golf foursome with former Seahawks or Cougs teammates, who's going to be in this foursome?
Okay. Alex Brink for sure, because he can golf his butt off. I would go with Jordan Babineau because he can golf his butt off. Then I need somebody that I can beat. So, I'm gonna go with my buddy Finest Rab, the dude I told you about that no one really knows. He just got into it. The dude is 6'6". He just got into it. He's played like five rounds, but he has so much leverage on the ball. He's crushed in like 275, 280. Wow. He doesn't even realize what he's doing. I'm just looking at him, shaking my head, like, dude, I've been playing this game for 10 years and I've crushed him 280 maybe three times my whole life. So yeah, that'll be my squad right there.
All right, I like it. I think I'm good, Ben. You got any other questions?
No, Bomb, thanks for coming on, man. You're doing a lot of good things in the community. Good luck on the podcast. We appreciate you coming on. We'll obviously wrap this up, get it out. Make sure you feature you. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Hopefully, you know, we see you out in Pullman at some point. I think with Rolo coming in, it's going to be fun to watch. Recruiting's picking up. But certainly appreciate you coming on the show and, you know, share more about your stuff or yourself, ETA, and all the good things you're doing in the community, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate you guys having me. Check me out, Bump City, the podcast, every Wednesday by 3 o'clock. If I'm feeling good, it'll get out earlier than that.
Thanks, Bump. We appreciate it.